All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, January 20th, 2015. 16. I knew I'd do it one day. This is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 23 degrees and under lake effect warning here in upstate New York. Not really snowing yet, but it could be. So where did we leave off yesterday? We titled the show DNA Stem Cells, X and Y, Parabiosis Cures, and Spermibots. Actually, it's the sperm bots, but spermy bots sound cuter. What's interesting is I could not remember what the name of that procedure was called, where they attached two animals, I believe, in the case of the experimentation with two rats together. I thought that they, in the original experiments, I think they actually stitched the blood vessels together, but it said that they just have to tie the skin together. And then within a few days, all the blood vessels grow together. It's kind of disgusting. But that's where they started discovering that old blood, if they receive some sort of transfusion of new blood, the proteins from the new blood cause the old cells in the older organism to get younger and vice versa, which was quite disturbing. And I wanted to dig a little bit more into that this morning because there are a few stories out there. So this is parabiosis, I believe. Hold on, we're going to look at it. Parabiosis. P-A-R-A-B-I-O-S-I-S. Look it up. Do a little research. It's pretty disturbing. I don't know. You know, in a lot of the U.S. stories, they say, oh, it was only back in the 1950s we started experimenting. But I had known from my research the last time in this that it had gone way back a few hundred years, and I think the earliest I saw was the 1820s, but I was even pretty sure that they had been trying stuff like this back in the beginning days of medicine. So it's definitely not something new. It's definitely something that science may have been aware of, at least from an occult perspective, that the blood of young organisms made old organisms young again. But anyways, check it out. Especially knowing that all the rich billionaires want to cure aging. I was out of The Guardian. Can we reverse the aging process by putting young blood into older people? It says the testings are now being the findings are now being tested on humans, but we had done a series of experiments that produced incredible results by giving young blood to old mice. And remember, now we found out that the results were so incredible that we have lizards dens such as like Harvard and Princeton who are dedicating time and effort. They reproduce the research, and now who knows, they're probably going to make, you know, newfangled drugs to go along with it. So anyway, let's read this. On an August morning in 2008, Tony Weiss-Corey sat in a conference room at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Palo Alto, California, waiting for his lab's weekly meeting to begin. Weiss-Corey, a professor of neurology at Stanford University, oh, I bet he was one of them, was leading a young group of researchers who studied aging and neurodegeneration. And as a rule, the gatherings were forgettable affairs. The incremental nature of science does not lend itself to big surprises. But a lab member scheduled to speak that day had taken on a radical new project and had results to share. Saul Videla had spent the past year engrossed in research that called to mind the speculative metal ages science, which is what I said. I thought they were messing with this in the Middle Ages. He was investigating whether the old and frail could be rejuvenated by infusions of blood from the young, and the hypothesis was not absurd as it might sound. And we know that. We established it yesterday. They already have been onto that, but it's the young proteins in the blood. And not only does it turn old young again, but it literally changes gray hair to brown and stops a lot of these degenerative diseases. I don't know if I'm. This is like a really long-winded story. I don't want to hear about their whole life history. Holy shit. You know what? We're going to hop right on to the next one because it was just way too long. That story went, it was like a novel. Anyway, all right. Young blood to be used in the ultimate rejuvenation trial in California. People with Alzheimer's will be given transfusions of young blood to see if it improves their cognition. Sounds like a plot from a dark vampire movie. In October, and this was October of 2014, people with Alzheimer's disease will be injected with the blood of young people in the hope that it will reverse some of the damage caused by Alzheimer's. Scientists behind the experiment have evidence on their side. Work in animals has shown that a transfusion of young mouse blood can improve cognition and the health of overall organs in older mice, and it could even make those animals live longer. Ramifications of the cosmetics and pharmaceutical industries could be huge if the same thing can happen in people. Disregard the vampire legends. The ideas of refreshing old blood with new harks back to the 1950s. That's where I said, like, this article says 1950s, but I found in when my research that it's actually been going on way before that, back to the 1820s at least, and if not, even back to medieval times. But this says, hey, it harkens back to the 1850s when Clive McKay of Cornell University in Ithaca, New York, stitched together the circulatory systems of an old and a young mouse. A technique called, and this is the technical name, heterochronic parabiosis. And he found that the cartilage of the old mice soon appeared younger than it would be expected. And it wasn't until recently, however, that the mechanisms behind this experiment were more clearly understood. In 2005, Thomas Rando at Stanford University in California and his team found that young blood returned the liver and the skeletal stem cells of old mice to a more youthful state during heterochronic parabiosis. The old mice were also able to repair injured muscles as well as the young mice. And spooky things even seemed to happen in the opposite direction as well. Young mice that received old blood appeared to age prematurely, ding, and in some cases, injured muscles did not heal as fast as would be expected. Several other experiments have shown similar effects. In 2012, Amy Wagers at Harvard University showed that young blood can reverse heart decline in old mice. Her team paired healthy young mice with old mice that had cardiac hypertrophy, a condition which swells the size of their heart, and then connected their circulatory systems. And after 4 weeks, the old mouse's heart had shrunk to the same size as the younger partner's. And in this experiment, the young mouse was seemingly unaffected by the old blood. Its heart did not change to a bigger size. Once the researchers had ruled out the effect of reduced blood pressure on the older mice, they identified a protein in the blood plasma called growth differentiation factor 11, or GDF-11, that appeared to fall with age. To see if that was linked to the rejuvenation efforts, the team gave the old mice with enlarged hearts daily injections of GDF-11 for 30 days, and guess what? Their hearts decreased in size almost as much as they had in the parabiosis experiments. A year later, the same team showed that in mice with daily injections of GDF-11 also increases the number of blood vessels and the number of stem cells in the brain, both factors known to improve brain function. So how interesting, this GDF-11 that they've isolated sounds like some sort of new, like, growth or youth hormone. It's actually a protein. I wonder how many Kissingers are receiving daily injections of this, especially since they have Harvard and Princeton and what was the other one of the big universities in California all working on this now and have all separately proven that this theory about young blood into old works. You know, don't think it's like, oh, look, they've come up with the cure for aging. Yay. You know, and they want us to be all excited about this, that all these scientists are doing it just for you and me, little Johnny. But they're not. You know, we are not the ones with the invested billions of dollars into quote unquote curing aging. Maybe we'll benefit. And this sounds pretty promising. If it's just a simple protein that they can isolate from the blood of younger living organisms, you know, that might not require having a factory of hosts or something, which is like one of my worst nightmares. Sounds like something out of one of the final X-Files episodes. But, all right, anyway. A year later, the team showed that in mice with daily injections of GDF-11 also increased the number of blood vessels and the stem cells in the brain, both factors known to improve brain function. And a separate team led by Tony Weiss-Corey of Stanford performed similar experiments, and his team injected blood plasma from young mice into old mice and also showed an improvement in the old mice's physical endurance as well as cognitive function. Both mice and humans, GDF-11 falls with age, and we do not know why it declines, but we do know that it is involved in several mechanisms that control growth. It is also thought to mediate some age-related effects on the brain, in part by activation of other proteins that are involved in neuronal growth and long-term memory. So, the billion-dollar question is, would GDF-11 boost have the same effects on humans? Weiss-Corey thinks it would, and having taken the step of injecting young human plasma into old mice, and his preliminary results have now suggested that human blood has similar rejuvenating benefits for old mice as young blood does. So he put human blood, young human blood into an old mouse, and that rejuvenated the old mouse as well. How wonderful. We saw astounding effects, he says. The human blood had beneficial effects on every single organ that we have studied so far. Oh, enter hand-rubbing evil scientist music. Da, da, da. Now the final step. Giving the young blood plasma to older people with a medical condition, and that is about to begin. Now, this story was written right at the end of 2014, so, I mean, I'm going to say we saw that Big Think story yesterday, the one that was written all, like, pretty happy, dumb and user-friendly about this parabiosis. They didn't even mention that it's called parabiosis, by the way, because one typing of that into Google and searching it is going to bring up all these horrifying stories about stitching animals together. And so they thought, nah, let's make it real dumb and user-friendly. We don't even need to tell them what the procedure is called. Let's just tell them how wonderful it is because we found the fountain of youth in young blood. But the scary part of the matter is that they've been doing these experiments for a long time. And if these really work to, like, completely rejuvenate your organs and that, I mean, we saw, I'll tell you what I saw last year. I saw Kurzweil go from a man who can sit there and talk about being a part of the machine and living forever and curing aging, who had lots of wrinkles and obviously had a case of Grecian formula in his hair, to a guy where I saw him in an interview. Oh, I don't know. It was probably one of the, we haven't done Kurzweil in a while, but it's probably one of the last times we talked about Kurzweil, but he had an interview and he had this new haircut and everything. And I swear to God, I don't know if you guys, any of you remember it, but the ones who listen every day probably do. I remember saying when I looked at it, I was looking at the date of the video and the interview, and I was like, wow, Kurzweil's literally looked like they've turned back the clock 20 years. Like, his hair didn't look like it had Grecian formula anymore. Like, it looked like it had gone back to his old color and everything. wonder if he put himself up for one of these experiments. I don't know. Just kind of freaky. I mean, literally can turn back the clock. It's frightening. Think about the lunacy that could ensue if, I don't know. Think about the lunacy that could ensue if people decided to start taking the blood of the young and infusing it into themselves. I don't know. It's frightening. All right, let's get back here. So in early October of 2014, the team at Stanford will be giving transfusions of blood plasma donated by people under 30 to older volunteers with mild to moderate Alzheimer's. The final step is giving the blood to older people with medical conditions, and getting approval to perform the experiment in humans has been relatively simple, says Weiss-Cray, thanks to the long safety record of blood transfusions. Here we go. This is what I was just saying. He warns against swapping blood at home. I knew it. Because transfusions need to be screened for disease. Match for blood type. Yeah, don't forget about that one. And then, of course, how many people have home centrifuges to be able to separate out the plasma? And then he says, certainly you cannot drink the blood, he says, but obviously we have not tried that experiment. Oh, my God. Why did he even have to add that one in there? Because you know there's going to be some lunatic out there who's going to decide to do that. Anyway, following the impressive results in the animal experiments, the team now hopes to see immediate improvements in cognition. But Weiss-Cray cautions that this is all still very experimental. We will assess cognitive function immediately before and for several days after the transfusion, as well as tracking each person for a few months to see if any of their family or caregivers report any positive effects. The effects might just be transient, but even if it is just for a day, it is proof of concept that is worth pursuing. Now, I just was reading another story. It was one of the research articles yesterday I dug up on this, and it does seem to be transitory. So if you're going to be getting plasma infusions, you need to keep getting plasma infusions for the youthful appearance to remain. It says all the researchers involved in the work agree that GDF11 is unlikely to be the only factor that keeps organs youthful. That's just way too optimistic for it to be just one factor, says Francesco Lofredo, who studies the effects of young blood and old animals at Harvard. It is much more likely to be several factors that exert these effects in combination, but Lofredo says that the approach of testing the effects of young blood in people with Alzheimer's is fascinating. But he reckons that in the long term, it is best to continue to strive to identify the individual factors that are exerting the rejuvenating effects so that they can be translated to humans more easily. And imagine if you had to be transfused with young blood all the time. Oh, no. It's hard to imagine that as a therapy. Who's going to be donating all this blood, he asks? Well, you know, again, like I said, we can always have factories to produce it. They could always make synthetic plasma, I'm sure, or synthetic proteins. I mean, I would be careful. He's asking. He's like, where are we going to get all this young blood from? I don't think I'd be looking for that. You know, and here's the other thing. Where are we going to get all this donated blood from? They just opened the blood banks back up, if you remember. Back in the 80s, I believe, they banned blood from anyone who had any homosexual contact because of HIV, and that was just a few months ago. Now they have opened the blood banks back up 100% for donors, as well as donors who've had unprotected sex, or at least I think they make you wait, though. There's still a waiting period, but I don't know. There's a lot of potential, and especially when we started reading back a few months ago about some of the proteins involved in Alzheimer's with the malformations look very similar to the ones that they were finding in CJD and CVJD, that Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, the bovine spongiform encephalopathy, a.k.a. mad cow disease. And they discovered that they thought it was transmissible through blood transfusion as well as through potentially dental work. I would definitely be careful with who I got blood from or proteins from. You know, I don't know if any of these technologies end up being something that we could use to, you know, help speed recovery or whatever. I would say look to a close family member that you trust, like a child, and see if they would be willing to donate some blood. I mean, even the thing goes, that holds true for when you're getting surgery. They talk about doing your own blood before you go for a scheduled surgical procedure versus getting blood at the hospital. You know, some of these stem cell therapies that they're doing now, they're coaxing stem cells for body parts out of your own skin. It's always a good idea to use your own or something close to you. I just wouldn't be getting anything out of a bank. I mean, I see so much failure in every step of the way for people in some of these positions and these agencies doing due diligence to keep us safe. I wouldn't, like I said, I wouldn't be getting blood from some stranger into me if I could possibly help it, for sure. Anyway, back to this. He says, who's going to be donating all this blood? Weiss Corje agrees. It would be great if we could identify several factors that could boost older people, he said, and then we might be able to make a drug that does that same thing. Of course it would be. And we also want to know what organ in the body produces these factors, and if we knew that, maybe we could just stimulate that tissue in older people. Alessandro Luviano at Sapienza University in Rome in Italy says that the research on diseases of the aging certainly holds promise, but he is more interested in the potential of using young blood in chronic disease. People with cancer who resist muscle loss have a better chance of surviving. And so I would like to consider the possibility of using these youth factors in young blood to reduce muscle wasting that occurs during chemotherapy. Laviano is looking at the effects of GDF-11 on tumors in animals to see if it inhibits their growth. But he would also like to start an observational trial in humans. It would be a very simple start, he said, but to find the age of blood given to people receiving transfusions and testing its effects is something that hasn't been done. And, you know, that's something exactly that I was thinking about yesterday when I was reading these stories. So you're in a hospital and you're having surgery or you've had an accident and they got to pull blood out of the blood bank. Well, if we're discovering here now through this research, and they've actually been discovering this for a long time, but now they've verified it at a lot of the Ivy League universities as well, that actually the age of the blood ages your organs. So, you know, think about this. You could have had some, you know, 80-year-old donor, probably not, but you could have, or, you know, some drug addict who has lots of genetic damage because they ate bad food. You know, I mean, we're finding out that there are so many things that they didn't understand about how the body works and how our, not only our blood is affected, but how that blood then affects our organs. And not only that, but how even our life experiences affect our DNA and how transmissible those things are. I don't know. If I had my choice, I would say keep anybody's bodily fluids away from yours if you don't know them well and want to be like them. It's almost like we're this organism that we just totally didn't understand in the first place, which I don't think we do. They're getting there, though. Remember, they're going to be like gods, and here we go. Head transplant doctor, and this is the one out of Italy. I'm going to stay over in Italy. I think that's where that other guy was. Yeah, he was in Rome. Head transplant doctor asks, quote, billionaires like Zuckerberg to help give the Russian man, the one who has volunteered himself to be the first head transplant, a new body. Now, I saw a story yesterday. Supposedly, the same doctor has transplanted a monkey's head onto a new body. And there were a bunch of stories, and it said warning graphic pictures. But now they think he's lying because he doesn't have any proof. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd be letting a dude like this replace my head in a new body, but I guess we'll see. Italian medic Sergio Canavero has called on Russian and foreign billionaires, including Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg, to finance groundbreaking head transplant surgery in Russia. Canavero made the comments while speaking to a would-be patient via video link. The Italian regularly makes the headlines for his controversial ideas on human head transplantation, and he has claimed successful outcomes of the surgery as possible, and that recent experiments his colleagues have conducted in China and South Korea prove his point. Canavero was heavily criticized for his views at the annual surgeons meeting in Annapolis held in the summer of 2015. And although he spoke of the alleged successful experiments carried out on mice by his Chinese colleagues, the audience of the American Academy of Neurological and Orthopedic Surgeons was not convinced. Canavero's main argument is based on the glue-like properties of polyethylene glycol, PEG, the compound that is often used as a laxative. Yeah, and it's in a lot of, isn't PEG in plastics too? PEG plastics. Compound that is often used as a laxative, but which has also allegedly been used in a quote-unquote glue to glue the motor sensors of the lab animal spinal cords after they have been seriously or partially severed without causing paralysis. In a video link conversation exclusively published by RT Rupley, don't post it anywhere because you'll get a copyright strike. Anything Rupley, stay away from. Canavero told his would-be patient about a full head transplant in a monkey. This is the one that I read about yesterday, conducted in China. The monkey survived perfectly without injury for 24, and then there's dots, and it says for 20 hours. Then, before being euthanized, so they killed the poor monkey. Because, of course, we didn't want to keep the animal alive. Well, why? If the monkey survived perfectly without injury and you've transplanted his head onto another body, why would you not use that animal to show that it was absolutely possible and that you'd done it versus euthanize it because, of course, you didn't want to keep the animal alive, unquote. Cavaniero then goes on to say that the Chinese have already conducted the first human head transplant as well. And, you know, I wouldn't doubt that. The Chinese are doing a lot. Remember, the Chinese are the ones building the clone factory for 1 million cattle eventually. And potentially human clones. So that's what the billionaire CEO said in an interview. When Cavaniero announced that he wanted to conduct head transplant surgery in 2015, a Russian tech scientist named Spindirinov reached out to him saying that he was willing to participate. Spindirinov suffers from the rare muscle wasting disorder and believes that the operation could be a chance for longer life. Now, here's a question. We're talking head transplant surgeries, and we just talked about blood transfusions from young to old and how it rejuvenates all kinds of different muscles and neurons and hearts and livers and everything else. Have they tried that on somebody like this or Stephen Hawking, who have degenerative diseases, to see if maybe we don't have to go through a head transplant? Maybe we just give them a little bit of young blood and everything goes back to normal again. I don't know. Just a thought. Just a thought. I think I'd rather go for the young blood transplant than I would someone sawing off my head and stitching it onto some unknown body. Can it, anyway, Kevin Arrow says now it's up to Russia to help Spinindov, as he cannot receive a donor body in China on biological and ethical reasons. So the only chance now is to conduct the operation in Russia or another European country. And what is really needed is political will and money. So I am asking, and this is the surgeon that wants to do this head transplant. I'm asking today, Russian billionaires and also foreign billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg, who already sponsor much of this life extension research. Ding, ding, ding. Remember, we looked at all the tech billionaires who have been putting billions of dollars behind trying to live forever. Yes, well, good old Marky Zuckerberg, who's also sponsoring much of this life extension research, and this is certainly about extending life, to finance, to bankroll the first head transplant in Russia on Valerie Spindanov. We need his help, please. Okay, so where do we go from here? Well, not really sure what we're going to look at. I have so many stories. Actually, Stephen Hawking did show up in the news again, talking about how technology and machines are the greatest threat to humankind. And we'll look at that just because it is Stephen Hawking. And Stephen Hawking does have a pretty debilitating disease, and though I'm sure he's not going to go for the head transplant. He's a bit smarter than that. Machines and technology presenting the greatest threat to mankind, says Stephen Hawking. The greatest threats to mankind will come as science and technology continue to advance at an alarming rate, says eminent scientist Stephen Hawking. Speaking ahead of BBC's annual Wraith Lecture, Hawking suggested that the chance of a catastrophe on Earth would become almost certain within the next 10,000 years. And I mean, he's just a little too generous there. I think it's going to be long before 10,000. But the human race would not, Desert Hawk, would not be able to voyage or settle in space for at least another 100 years. We will not be able to establish self-sustaining colonies in space for at least the next 100 years. So we have to be very careful in this period. Yeah, because we're kind of painting ourselves into a corner. We have to still make this planet survive for at least another century before we can get off this rock. Cosmologist who will deliver the lecture for the BBC about the science of black holes suggested that the most prolific threats would rise from technological advances, such as more powerful weapons and biological diseases. We're going to talk about some biological diseases here if we have time, and it's still a little bit early, so we might. Good old Zika virus. Zika is raging, but don't worry about it because we're going to have some genetically modified mosquitoes coming to the rescue. Yeah, some new ones, by the way. It says, we're not going to stop making progress or reverse it, says Hawking. So we must recognize the dangers of progress and control them. The scientist also discusses how black holes are formed in his lecture, which will be broadcast on BBC Radio 4 on January 26th and February 2nd, he explains that when stars run out of fuel and collapse under their own gravity, they become black holes, a phrase coined in 1967. I don't know what that has to do with technology and Earth, but whatever. He also suggests, though, and this is pretty interesting, that it might be possible to be sucked through a black hole and arrive in another universe. However, making the return journey to our universe would not be possible, he adds, The Guardian reported that during his lecture, Hawking was asked whether speaking through his electronic synthetic voice had altered his personality and allowed him to become more extroverted. He had said he had never been called an introvert before, and just because I spent a lot of time thinking doesn't mean I don't like parties and getting into trouble, he said. No drunk driving that wheelchair. Hawking also discussed how his diagnosis with motor neuron disease that began at age 21 and affected his life and outlook. If you've never looked into the biography of Stephen Hawking, you should, because he wasn't always like that, which I didn't realize. He actually was young. He got married. He got into all kinds of trouble. And then he started to get this degenerative disease. But he still was all there. It didn't affect his brain. It's also important not to become angry, he says, no matter how difficult life is, because you can lose all hope if you can't laugh at yourself and life in general. And I got to tell you, if I found myself in his position, and I think he's probably in his 60s or 70s now. He's lived a pretty full life and contributed very fully to the scientific community. But that's a pretty good perspective. I mean, I know right now, especially this time of year after Christmas and all this horrible crap that's going on, you know, when I was talking to my friend the other day, the one thing we agreed was, I mean, is there anybody, literally anybody out there that you can think of that you know who is really happy right now with the way things are going and how great life is? And oh my God, it's just so wonderful. I don't know too many people. Maybe you do. And I would say if you have someone out there who's saying how absolutely amazing and wonderful life is and how great and rosy the world is, that they probably aren't telling the truth. But hey, but the fact that he can have such a positive outlook and be in the physical situation that he is in says a lot for, you know, maybe a way that we should all be looking at living our lives. Just be happy and try to laugh at it, because if you can't, if you're too serious, man, life gets a little too stressful. Anyway, a professor who resides at Cambridge University was due to record his lecture in November, but he was forced to postpone it until January 7th. He delivered it to more than 400 people at the Royal Institution in Mayfair, London. So there you go. All right, so he had said, too, about biological diseases and things that we need to be careful of on Earth. Here's something pretty damn interesting. Actually, two of them talking about spreading like wildfire. So we know that we have Zika virus. And I'm not really going to get into Zika virus because there's still a lot of information that is unknown as far as even if it is spread by mosquitoes. Of course, the CDC is assuming that it is spread by mosquitoes, but that has not been absolutely proven yet from anything that I've seen. And some of my contacts that know about viruses, I don't know, it may or may not be spread. It does say in the virus dictionary that it is spread by mosquitoes, but it the first time now that they've been seeing this microencephaly has been with the Zika, and they did not see that before. So who knows if the microencephaly is being caused by the Zika or not. But check this out. Zika virus could now stir demand for genetically modified mosquitoes. Oh, really? Was that the plan all along? Because remember when we first started discussing these Oxitec genetically modified mosquitoes that were released all over in the Cayman Islands, they wanted to release them in Florida. And then they released him in Brazil to combat what? Oh, another mosquito-borne disease, dengue. That was right before the Zika really kicked off to epidemic proportions. Well, now they're talking about using the Aedes aegypti, that is the mosquito that they've been genetically modifying against dengue, to maybe work as a potential tool against Zika. Mosquitoes that have been genetically modified to cause population crashes in the wild could be a potent tool against a host of troublesome diseases. Now remember, this is using that CRISPR-Cas9 technology with something that they call population either suppression Or the other way is population elimination. And they go in and they edit the genes so that when these mosquitoes reproduce and have offspring, oh, wait, the offspring never make it beyond larval phase and die as infants. Now, again, I'm going to just do a dotted line from the way that they're engineering these new genetically modified mosquitoes to what they're seeing in these babies supposedly born to mothers infected with Zika, where the babies, I just saw, somebody was telling me yesterday that no babies have died from that Zika virus, and I saw yesterday it was over 60 or 90 of them so far by December that had died in Brazil. They're not really reporting that, but I dug up probably 20 stories last night in some research I was doing, and there was a story that had talked about a large number of babies already that have been that have died because of this. Though, again, you know, I don't know about the details yet. The Global Health Organization is still out on trying to explain what they see going on here. Anyway, an outbreak in the Western Hemisphere of Zika virus could give countries, including the United States, new reasons to try wiping out the mosquitoes with genetic engineering. And yes, that's what's important, because we have now seen Zika. They had warned about it showing up in Texas, and we saw one case in Houston. And remember, these are people who traveled to South America, supposedly, and now have come back contracting this disease. But we had one in Houston. We had a pregnant woman show up in Hawaii. We had two yesterday in Miami, as well as two in Illinois. And don't worry about it, because they cannot transmit the virus person to person. But I found a story last night that had said, hey, no, it won't transmit person to person. But if an infected person comes back to the United States and then a mosquito bites them, oh, the mosquito that bit them could very potentially then start transmitting Zika virus to people in the United States. So you knew that was coming. This is going to be the excuse, guys, for them to let these Oxitec mosquitoes go in the United States. I am pretty certain of it, because remember, they blocked them in Florida. And then there was all kinds of uproar over them releasing those genetically modified moths in New York that they didn't do any type of environmental study over. It says yesterday, the Brazilian city of, and please excuse me, I don't mean to slaughter this name, Pirac e Cabidaba, said it would expand the use of genetically modified mosquitoes to fight Aedes aegypti, the species that spreads dengue and chikungunya, as well as the Zika virus. The genetically modified mosquitoes were created by who? Oh, our good old friend Oxitec, who now has been purchased by Interexon. Don't forget, Interexon has bought all kinds of GMO companies now. Oxitec, who is a British company, oh, it even says this, recently purchased by Interexon, a synthetic biology company based in Maryland. Oh, how interesting. Maryland, where they have Fort Detrick and Plum Island and John Hopkins University with the brain research and the NSA headquarters and who the hell knows what else. Very interesting that Interexon is based in Maryland. I don't think that's an accident. The company has said, and this is Oxitec, that it has released bugs in parts of Brazil and the Cayman Islands to battle dengue fever, but controlling Zika could become a pressing priority. Of course it will be. And now we're going to have to release these Oxitec mosquitoes under the guise of Project BioShield. You wait and see. No, I don't know. I'm just making stuff up, but it's very possible, because I think they're going to work this up into a frenzy. It's all over. I had to add Zika to my outbreak playlist for YouTube to be searching for keywords, because it's happening all over. There's all kinds of videos now. It says controlling Zika could become a pressing priority, and although the infection causes relatively mild symptoms. And that's the thing. I mean, most people didn't even get sick or know that they had it. And all of a sudden now it's causing all these weird birth defects and stuff never before seen. This is, although the infection causes relatively mild symptoms, it is suspected. So they don't know for sure. It is suspected. And they don't know that if it's some other vaccine, maybe they're trying to hide the effects of something else. Who knows? It'll be interesting to see what they come up with as the official story. But right now it is suspected of causing more than 3,500 cases of microcephaly from babies born to pregnant women who were bitten by Zika-infected mosquitoes, which then U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention has issued a warning to pregnant women traveling to 14 different affected countries in South America and Central America. Anthony Fauci, head of the U.S. National Institute for Allergy and Infectious Disease, last week called the Zika outbreak a, quote, an explosive pandemic. You knew it. All they got to do is start throwing that pandemic word around and people are going to be getting their panties in a twist. He's calling it an explosive pandemic that he warned could soon jump to the U.S. We read a story a few weeks ago. Of course it's going to jump to the U.S. because of climate change. That's what it said. And there is no vaccine yet for Zika, but don't worry because they just came out with one for dengue. And dengue and Zika, as well as malaria, are all part of the same family of viruses. But since there is no vaccine yet for Zika, although Fauci said that the U.S. government has been working on one for the past month, though a quick solution isn't likely, and the head of the Brazilian Biomedical Center, the Butantan Institute, said the final development for vaccination could take several years and probably lots of testing and lots of people. Could generate more interest, though, in new mosquito control tactics like the ones now being tested in Brazil. The mosquitoes being released have been genetically altered so their offspring die quickly. Oh, yes, what a coincidence. Causing the population to crash, according to Oxitec. The release of genetically modified bugs in the U.S. is a possibility, too. See, I knew it. An interest in the idea might accelerate. Or, if Zika or unexplained cases of microcephaly start to spring up in Florida. So those pesky Key Westers who stood up and said, hell no, you're not releasing those genetically modified mosquitoes here last year. And they blocked it, though those pterodactyl-sized ones that were 20 times size of normal that blew in on Hurricane Debbie, supposedly from we don't know where, but I'll guarantee you that they were probably somehow related to the ones that Oxitec let loose in the Cayman Islands just a few months before. But you know what? They didn't have enough dengue or Zika or any other disease at that time to be able to justify releasing the genetically modified mosquitoes. But now if we have Zika encroaching on Florida, those Floridians are going to put their arms up and they're going to beg for the Oxitec mosquitoes. You just wait. It's pretty scary. And I think that this is how they're going to force this crap on us. Robo bees too, coming to a crop near you. Anyway, the release of GM bugs in the United States is a possibility too. And in the interest and interest in the idea might accelerate if Zika or unexplained cases of microcephaly spring up in Florida. Oxitec says that it's been wanting like a kid at Christmas who was told no to try its mosquitoes in Florida, but is waiting for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration to finish its environmental impact report. So, you know what? Environmental impact report is going to finish. Doesn't matter what the people of Florida say, because they said, no way, Jose. But I guess the USDA might trump what the people want, especially if it is now a danger because Zika is spreading uncontrollably. So put in a seatbelt for that. Who knows? But I would say that man-made future pandemics are probably the way to go. And it gets the whole greasy skids of vaccines working really well. Now they can start playing with these GMO insects like there's no tomorrow. Create one to kill another. But here's another one. We've talked about Lyme disease many times before. Connection to Plum Island. Experiments that they did with mosquitoes. Back in the Thousand Islands in the 80s. Loaded with Lyme disease. As well as ticks. Lyme disease ticks are rampant everywhere. Especially in the Northeast. And don't forget there's that new Passawan virus as well. In the ticks in the upper Northeast, I think it was like Connecticut area was where they were reporting it last year. That's very much like Lyme, but worse. It kills and there is no treatment. Again, coming from ticks. Well, story came out yesterday. And, you know, once they start using insects as disease vectors and they spread all over, and remember that was part of the biowarfare project that supposedly ended wink, in 1972. As they infect our woods, all the places that you could run and hide with genetically modified insects that are loaded with killer diseases, there won't be anywhere to run and hide. So I think that it's very convenient that this is all happening at this time. Ticks that carry Lyme disease are now in 45% of all 45% of all U.S. counties. Ticks that spread Lyme disease live in about half of all the U.S. counties, says the Journal of Medical Entomology. The geographic reach of these blood-sucking arachnid parasites has changed substantially since the last study 18 years ago. The study shows that the distribution of Lyme disease vectors have changed substantially over the last two decades and highlights areas where risk for human exposure to ticks has changed during that time. And remember, we looked at ticks originally, and some of them are literally the size of pollen. Like, you would never be able to even see the tick on you. They can get into your hair and on the back of your neck and in your armpits and things. It's really a horrifying thought. You know, it stopped me from spending a lot of time in the woods this last summer because they said we were at epidemic proportions up here. And the last thing I want to do is to get Lyme disease. I had a family member who had it for quite a number of years, and it was very debilitating. She lost the use of her legs for quite a number of years and this weird arthritis, and it was just an awful, awful thing to see. I don't want that to happen to me or anyone in my family. And so the only way to do it is to bundle up in the heat of July and to stay out of the woods. Actually, Abby Martin, there's a link in here. Why is the government suppressing the Lyme disease epidemic interview? I don't have time today, but that might be a good one to look at. I don't know. I'll check that one out. Most of the expansion from a common type of tick known as the deer tick, the bear tick, or the black-legged tick, and in 1998, it inhabited about 30% of all counties in the United States, but now has extended its coverage to 45% of all counties. And the actual number of counties, the black-legged tick that has been spotted in has doubled. Cases of Lyme disease, which bring fever and headache and eventually harm to the heart, brain, spine before causing death, have increased 320% in the northeastern U.S. up here where the black-legged tick has traveled. So it's increased 320% in the northeastern United States. Reforestation and increasing deer populations are the primary reasons given for the uptick, which I call bullshit on that because I know this year our deer population was down. And as far as reforestation, you know, where are they reforesting? Up here, we do have lots of trees, but I don't see them reforesting in too many places. I see them clear-cutting mountains and things to be able to do fracking all over the Northeast. Reforestation, so they say, reforestation and an increasing deer population are the primary reasons given for the uptick, according to the Journal of Medical Entomology. Other factors favoring tick expansion are warming climates, of course. Yes, it is climate change, as well as rain, though vast plains are effective bulwarks against further spread. The bug's bite is responsible for about 300,000 Lyme disease cases each year. And Lyme disease is such a freaky disease. It's this little corkscrew thingy that can then go hide in your joints and things for 20 years if you don't get it right away with the antibiotics. And it can be extremely elusive to treat. And even if you treat it, you may not actually get it all. And as a recurrence here 20 years later, says a lot of people are seeing ticks where they did not see them 20 years ago. And the observed range of expansion documented in our study highlights the need for continuing and enhancing our vector surveillance efforts, particularly along the leading edges of range expansion. And good practice to prevent Lyme disease is, of course, use DEET. Keep in the middle of the hiking trails, bathe or shower immediately coming indoors, and attached ticks can be removed by using tweezers and pulling up slowly on their head. And don't lose the head, guys. And here's one thing I see that's kind of ugly, is as they infect all of our woods, between the mosquitoes and the ticks and any of these other insect disease vectors, you know, the end result is to get us out of the areas that have woods and move us all back into the cities. Agenda 21, little small apartments. It's all good for the environment. Keeps our carbon footprint down if you don't have to drive 10 miles to the store or fire up that tractor to go harvest your corn crops or feed your methane-producing cow, because don't worry about it. We have a mealyworm farm just for your micro-apartment in the city with your Google self-driving car to take you to the store. All right, guys. Well, if you can even believe it, that's another one in the bags live. And then tonight at 6, Josh with the Anti-Tyranny News, 6 p.m. Eastern, Continual Condition with the Boys from New York at 8, 9 o'clock, Truth or Talk at 9 Eastern, 11, Antimedia Radio with...